It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. For many artists, writers, and musicians, solitude is an essential part of the creative process. This hour, we are going to explore creativity in quarantine with three Iowa artists. Later in the hour, I'll talk with pianist and composer Dan Knight and Iowa's poet laureate Deb Marquardt. But first, Claudia McGeehee is an author and illustrator who lives in Iowa City. She uses scratch boards to create beautiful visual art and illustration, often inspired by nature. She's the author of A Tall Grass Prairie Alphabet, My Wilderness, An Alaskan Adventure, and other books. And she's on the line with me now. Hello, Claudia.
Hi, Charity. Nice to be here with you.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And you and I have talked in the past about how much time you spend alone. So while for many of us, this time at home in semi-isolation is new, this is something you've been doing for a long time, isn't it?
It is. I've been working from my home studio for about 26 years, and so I had the structure and the habits right there when all of our self-quarantining started, and I handled discipline fairly well, but still, you know, there's that aura of what's going on and the bewilderment of what was happening that kind of shook my studio a bit as well. So,
oh, I'm sure. And also, you have family home with you, and you're used to being home alone, right?
I know, it's true. I mean, I got to see our daughter came home from studying abroad. She's our 21-year-old Lucy, and she came home mid-March, and then my husband Dan moved into his study upstairs to work. So now the periphery of silence is shattered a little bit down here in my basement studio, but the great things are that I have lunch companions every day, and you know, that's really nice, and we're all working well enough here. We like each other, so that's kind of a nice thing.
Yeah, that is definitely a benefit. You mentioned really the stress, the uncertainty surrounding this pandemic, and of course, we have all felt that. We all feel it to some degree or another every day. I think it kind of ebbs and flows for me. Mm-hmm. How did that impact your creativity at first?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was lucky enough to have a book project that's ongoing kind of pre-COVID. So it was a nice thread, and it has been a nice thread to kind of my creative world before. So I've kind of put myself on automatic as far as just working on this book goes. But I also kind of had an impulse that I wanted to give to somehow, and a lot of my very creative friends were turning to making masks and doing other wonderful things on social media. And I thought, what could I do? So I did develop a little poster that helps children kind of remind them to be safe, you know, wearing masks and, you know, giving people space. And so that was my gift. That was the one thing early on in you know, later in March that I created. And now I'm just kind of serving my creativity by just being in the chair and just doing what I need to do every day as I did before and trying to get through it.
I think, as I mentioned, I mean, my feelings ebb and flow. Sometimes the news that we get about what's going on in the world gets really overwhelming. I find myself feeling like I could be swept away by a mm-hmm. tidal wave of sometimes grief, sometimes anger. Do you have to try to control your access to information so that you don't get swept up in that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm like you, I'm a news hound, and I have read more newspapers and listened to more IPR and NPR over the last few weeks than I have, you know, normally. And it's a balance. I mean, I try and suspend what's going on. I hate to say that I deny what's going on. It's not that. It's just that to get anything done and to continue with normalcy, I have to block at some point, you know, information. And I do feel like I get to a healthier point. I'm involved in my work, and for a few hours I get a bit of a relief from the stress of what's going on, because we're all carrying it right now.
We have this email from a listener in Des Moines, and you are welcome to join this conversation, by the way. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100 or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. We'd love to hear about how this experience has influenced you creativity or your creativity. I know for a lot of people, it really has sparked creative efforts, and for some it has squashed creative efforts, and maybe it's a mix of both. But this is an email, Claudia, from Jay in Des Moines. As an introvert, for myself, the social restrictions currently in place aren't much of a change. As an artist, though, I've found it very difficult to work on my art in any significant measure. I've struck on the idea of putting together puzzles of fine artworks like Klimt and Frida Kahlo as a way to reignite my desire to work. I'd love to hear your guests' opinions on associative methods such as this to aid creativity. And Claudia, I wonder, do you have artwork that you take comfort in or you take inspiration from when you are finding it hard to find that inspiration?
Right. Well, I have a lot in common with Jay, I'm sure, because I am kind of introverted. And even though I have a social life, but I enjoy kind of intimate relationships. You know, I like Zooming with two or three people, maybe not a whole screen full. And I have done that too. As far as connecting, I agree that in this time, I found it hard to write. I'm doing my illustration, but I've kept a journal for many years, and I'm just finding it hard to write in it right now. So even though I would think it would be a great thing to look back on or an interesting thing for history's sake, but I do take comfort in other people's works. And I'm on Instagram, so I'm looking at a lot of people that are working contemporarily with me, pieces like that. But I've also gone back to some original loves, like looking at William Morris and the arts and crafts movement. That gives me some solace in some ways. So I do think that looking at, it's a time to kind of re-explore what we've loved in the past. I think it brings us comfort. And different people, different artists' work certainly have been a balm to me.
I've seen a lot of threads on social media, really for parents, saying, you know, this is a hard time. Be kind to yourself. Don't be, you know, a lot of parents feel like they're failing their kids in this moment when there's just so much expected of us. And it strikes me that that's just good wisdom for everyone. There shouldn't be pressure on you to be extra creative just because everybody's stuck at home. I mean, this is a hard time. Do we need to be kind and forgiving to ourselves if we can't do what we normally do?
Yeah, absolutely. You should. But I am also trying not to let it define me, too. I'm trying to carry on and, you know, work at the board. And like I said earlier, if I can just catch that wave of the muse, it's really helpful. And I feel better in the end of it, rather than, you know, it would be really easy to wallow on the couch and watch Netflix, I think, at this time. And I think for some people, it is necessary to do that, too, in order to get to the next place. But I also, you know, I'm feisty. I don't want this era to, you know, to rule what I'm doing either. So I am trying to be disciplined and sitting and going, yeah, forget it. I'm working. So
one of the things that I've really loved about this time is that I see a lot of people discovering or rediscovering the comfort of nature and spending more time outdoors, and not even in the big adventure way that I think is so popular right now, but in small ways, in the backyard, enjoying your flowers. And so much of your artwork is about that, Claudia. I wonder how you feel about watching through social media as people seem to notice some of those small, beautiful things that you've been making pictures of for so long.
Oh, I love it. Thanks. It's, I don't know. Nature has always sustained me. And right now it just seems amplified. I feel like, well, a lot of times when you go through crisis, other things will just be almost like you're seeing it through HD or something. They just seem so much more robust. And, you know, I'm like a lot of people waking up to small details that I haven't seen before, because a walk in the park, I know, is a privilege right now. A lot of people in the world don't have that privilege. And where we live in Iowa, you know, we have so many beautiful places that are still open that we can walk to. So, but I've noticed spring like I haven't done before in years, I think. And, you know, just the new growth outside. And it is great to read of kids being outside. I mean, I know they're missing school, but I mean, it's also very heartwarming to see them at Hickory Hill Park, you know, clambering around and looking at things. And yeah, that is a silver lining, I think.
As we get back to normal in the next few months, I think a lot of people are thinking about what do they want the new normal to be like? And that's one of those things that I hope endures. I hope that this is a moment of rediscovery for nature, and it's not something we forget about when we get to go back to doing most of the things we normally do.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a new world, man. It's going to be. And if we can just, you know, keep positive and see it as a challenge and that we're all forging it together, that's what I like about right now. It does feel like in the whole world, it's such an extraordinary event that the whole world is going through the same thing. So I really do feel that those energies are going to come together. Creativity, it'll forge. We'll do it.
Claudia, thank you so much for talking with me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks, Charity. Be well.
You too. Claudia McGeehee is an author and illustrator who lives in Iowa City. You can see some of her work at claudiamcgeehee.com. She also has some downloadable coloring pages that are great for grown-ups and kids if you need a little therapy at your kitchen table right now. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, creativity in quarantine. I'm talking with some very creative Iowans about how they are coping and creating during this pandemic. We'd also love to hear from you. How has this experience impacted your creativity? For some, it may have sparked creativity. For others, it's hard to create during this difficult time. We'd love to hear your story. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my next guest is Dan Knight. He is a Steinway pianist, composer, educator, and author. He grew up in Iowa and lived and performed here as well as around the world for many years. Now he lives and works in North Carolina. And during this time of solitude, he's been giving daily performances on Facebook. Here's a little sample.
It's a great song by none other than Charlie Chaplin, Smile.
Dan Knight will be performing live on Iowa Public Radio tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. That's live on iowapublicradio.org, I should say, on our website at 6 p.m. as part of our Tunes Day. If you haven't been following along, we're having concerts every Tuesday on our website, and it's been a great deal of fun. And Dan Knight is on the line with me now. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Charity, good morning. How are you?
I am good. It's so wonderful to hear your voice. And I've been loving watching your concerts each day, sharing them with my family. But Dan, before we talk about those concerts, you have been impacted by COVID-19, as so many others have, because especially your wife, Julie, is a very vulnerable person. You've had to be extraordinarily Yes. careful. Tell me how this has changed your life.
We had, Julie didn't tell a whole lot of people about it, but she had a really, really, really bad case of cytomegalovirus last January. And it turned out to be life-threatening. And she was at risk of losing her kidney transplant. But she was in a coma for almost 6 days. And we didn't know if she was going to come back. Wow. She did come back. She did come back. And she rallied, and she got all of her mental function, her neural function. She built her strength back up, and she's just remarkable. But she got out of the hospital last January, and then starting in February, really. I mean, we went to major precautions. So I had to scrub in, scrub out. I became her contact person, and she kind of had to live in a bubble. So we had a couple of weeks that were kind of a little open for her until about the middle of February. And then COVID-19 started hitting really, really, really hard, and the rest of the world started getting just pasted with this virus. And all of our doctors kind of told us, the folks at Duke, the folks at UNC Chapel Hill, and some of our friends here who are pathologists, everybody said, you know, you and Julie need to hunker down. It's time to take this really seriously, because it looks like it's community spread already.
Wow.
And they were right. Yeah. So it's been a step up from normal for us, basically, because the world around us has just been just getting bashed horrendously. So we're affected by that. But, and we're like everybody else now. I mean, you take a look at maybe whether you're going to go to the grocery store or not, and then you think to yourself, it's like, is this worth risking my life to go out and buy some pork chops?
Right. It's very scary. And Julie not only had that experience in January, but for people who don't know, she also has type 1 diabetes and received a kidney transplant a little over a year ago. So again, I mean, so many different vulnerabilities. And I know that you guys are not alone. So many families are living with someone who is vulnerable, so vulnerable in this time. And that creates that level of fear. So, Dan,
I think that's one of the things, as a
creative person, as a composer, as a pianist, living with that fear and the isolation that you absolutely need to live with, how did that change you as a musician?
That's a really good question, because of what it did. I always felt that I was a compassionate person anyway, but what it did is it kicked my compassion through the ceiling. And I felt, as an artist, I had a responsibility to do something, you know, to do whatever I could do. And I felt so helpless because so many people around me were getting ill, and the people we knew were passing away. And I just felt helpless to do anything. So Julie finally looked at me, because my go-to mechanism for stress, for dealing with stress, is just to go to the piano. You know, so the piano and I have a conversation, and everything kind of turns out better. And she said, look, you need to play. So why don't you just think about maybe doing a video or something, or recording yourself playing the piano, and why don't you put that on Facebook? So we did the first one. Today's day 57 or 58. So we're at 8 weeks of it now.
Wow.
Every single day. And it reminded me of something really important. I thought, The purpose of art is to express the inexpressible. And that should be the goal of every artist, to use the art that comes through us to express the inexpressible in our world. And so I took a look at it and I said, wow, you know, I have all these people who have given to me and all these things that I've collected kind of in my heart, all these pieces of music that are very important to me. And, you know, some of them are just entertaining. Some of them are heartfelt. Some of them break your heart. Some of them are just beautiful. And so I said, why don't I just start putting those on Facebook and just giving them to people? And it really gave me a sense of purpose, because I thought I could do something. I mean, if one person felt better after listening to a song that I played, then I thought, well, you know, that's worth everything.
Right.
So
and of course, at first it was your group of friends, but you know how social media works. Then people share it and people start looking at it. So tell me what the response has been like.
Oh, the response has been, it's been really beautiful and surprising, basically, because it's been fun, really, because I started doing this 2 weeks before the Steinway people started doing it. So they're having Steinway noon lunch concerts now from Steinway artists. And by the way, I just got an invitation to be a part of that.
Nice.
But it's been really beautiful, just because I just kind of give things from my heart, and it's just me. So I'm myself with all my little bugaboos and everything else about me. So I tell stories a little bit, and we have T-shirt Fridays. So I get a little goofy here, basically, because we're all in quarantine, you know, I saw Neil Sedaka play a lunchtime concert, and he was sitting in his T-shirt in his apartment in New York. And I said, well, if Neil Sedaka can do a T-shirt concert, so can I, you know. So, and it's a little bit off the board for Steinway, you know, but
right.
Again.
Right.
You know,
well,
so.
these are unprecedented times. Dan,
exactly.
You are such a compassionate person and such an empathetic person, and which is one of the things that I love so much about you. But as you and I have done shows together over the years, both of us wind up in tears frequently. As such a sensitive person, someone who gives so much of your heart to the world, can you protect yourself during this time? There's so much sadness.
Well, I think this is going to sound really contradictory, of course, but I think the only way to protect my heart is to open it more. I think because I really believe, I've thought about this a lot over the course of my life, and I think it's the kind of thing that you and I have expressed a lot, and I think it's one of the things that draws people to you, because you are real. And you have managed a way to open your heart in such a beautiful way to so many people that they feel that they know you. And you know what? They really do, because this is you. So what we have the opportunity to do as artists, you know, so if my heart is broken, what I have to do is put it in my art and open it more. Because the second I let something get in the way of even if it's pain or it's joy, if it's, you know, things that are happening politically or whatever, this is the only antidote for the anti-love forces that I see in the world, is just to give more love and to be persistent and honest and true about the whole thing. So I try not to play, to show off, which I do every now and then, you know, but you have to really, truly, honestly be giving. And give of your heart, and that's the only thing that heals my heart to this whole thing, is just to give more, to open more. Because the second I stop doing that, the second I start trying to close my heart to protect it, I have this thing that I refer to as resonance. You know, it's like anybody who's played a stringed music understands or a stringed instrument. Understands that if you play a guitar and you push something next to it, it stops the string from moving and it won't sing. So what I have to do with my heart is unencumbered. So I have to open it so that I resonate with the sounds of music with a capital M, I will put it that way. And then whatever resonates with me can resonate freely, and then I can be the instrument instead of the source of them. And then that's where real creativity happens, like when I get out of the way. And my part of the whole process is to be as prepared as I can to resonate. So it requires a little bit of risk, a whole lot of risk sometimes, and a whole lot of honesty and the ability to say, well, maybe I won't have anything to say today. But what has happened for me is that I found that I have so much to say that I can't control it sometimes here, especially.
And
it's just kind of like overrunning.
Right. It's helping so many people, Dan. So I'm so glad you've put yourself out there in that way. I want to take a phone call here from a fellow musician. Of course, musicians have been hit so hard by this pandemic in so many ways because your livelihoods depend on public events for so many of you. Tony Arnone just called in from Iowa City. He is a cellist. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Charity. How are you doing today?
Good. So you
have. Good morning.
You've
good morning.
You've been really worried, Tony, about the musical community and how hard so many of your musician friends have been hit by this epidemic. Tell me what you've been inspired to do.
Well, I mean, just seeing so many of my friends and colleagues struggling both now and just worrying about the future of will we be able to play for people again and share our music with other musicians. It's been really hard. And I, as you know, from me, one of my great escapes and passions is running. I've run 19 marathons, and I was scheduled to run my 20th marathon in Michigan in May, but of course that was canceled. And so what I've done, and sort of to think about and to support all my musician friends is, with the help of a very good friend, I'm running Tony's birthday marathon, which is my birthday on May 20th, which for my 20th marathon. And we're going to start and end in front of Voxman Music Building. And I will be basically running by myself. My friend Sarah will be pacing me and biking in front of me. And she created a 26.2-mile course all over Iowa City. Cool. And I'm just so excited to go out and hopefully see people waving and cheering me on and to draw attention to musicians and support them and just to maybe have the morale of my musician friends who also are, several people are going to come out and either run a little bit with me at a safe distance and or cheer me on. And it's just something to get excited and happy about. And I need that right now. And I think others do as well.
Yeah, Tony, thank you so much for calling. It's very cool how you're putting two of your passions together there, Dan. And that sounds like exactly what Tony's talking about, exactly what you were talking about, a way to open your heart and express it as therapy and support and just as art. I mean, running as art in that instance.
Yes, exactly. It is. It really, truly is. And one of the things I've been kind of astounded by is like I've actually had a chance to look in my little office that I have here in our home in Winston-Salem, and I started pulling things out and taking a look at them from years ago. And so many things that I wanted to do that I needed the time to take care of. Like I wrote the Walt Whitman Suite in 2005, and I performed it first in 2006 at the Museum of Art in Iowa City, and I did a recording of it for broadcast on Iowa Public Television. And then I did another recording of it with Richard Reeves on Reeves Audio, and that recording was nominated for Pulitzer Prize. But I have this recording, and it's for piano, and I thought, you know, I've always wanted to have the time to orchestrate it so that it could be played in the symphony with the words of Walt Whitman spoken instead of just played on the piano. And I took a look at that and I said, wow, you know, that's just sitting there. And all of a sudden now there's been this real prescience of immediacy, just because basically we're all just as healthy as the decisions we made 2 weeks ago.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So we're like, okay, wow, you know, that guy who coughed at a grocery store, maybe that's the one, you know. You know, what bad decision I made did I make, or or whatever, you know, because whatever it is, Julie and I have talked about that a lot. And we've already decided that if either one of us get COVID-19, that we're not going to a hospital just because we couldn't stand to be apart from each other.
Dan.
And probably whatever it is it, you know, if it hits Julie, she's going to pass. And probably if it hits me, it's the same thing. So we thought, well, better to be together. So,
well, Dan, it's
time to be on the road.
Yeah, we're out of time. But, Dan, sending so much love to you and Julie and to everyone. Thank you for sharing your songs with us. And, of course, you'll be performing live on iowapublicradio.org tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock as part of Iowa Public Radio's Tunes Day. And anybody can find Dan's daily concerts on his Facebook page as well. Dan, we'll talk soon. Love you so much. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, creativity in quarantine. I'm talking with creative Iowans about how they're coping and creating during this pandemic. And we'd love to hear from you as well. Send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or give us a call at 866-780-9100. We heard from Eric in Des Moines. He said, my home office is in the basement. I try to take the dog on walks around the acreage throughout the day to get out of here, but I still find it very hard to spend the day with only one small window. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. Susanna says, I'm a high school science teacher, but during the health crisis, I've been motivated to create outdoor learning opportunities for my sister's young children under 6. I have a lot of empathy for the stress my sisters go through at home with young children, so it's a creative challenge to design something that engages the minds and creativity of the kids while being low maintenance for their parents. I've made scavenger hunts, and I'm working on an ecological relationships project for them to do once school is over for the year. That's wonderful. And so many people have found such creative ways to help others during this time. Again, we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my next guest is Deborah Marquardt. She is a poet and musician originally from North Dakota, although she's been ours for a long time. She is a distinguished professor of liberal arts and sciences at Iowa State University and is currently Iowa's poet laureate. Deb, hello.
Hi, Charity. How are you? It's great to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear your voice. And Deb, as a professor, of course, and a poet laureate, I mean, your life was impacted suddenly in so many ways by the closing of Iowa State University and the canceling of, I'm sure, so many appearances and events. Tell me how you've been coping and what you've been doing.
Yes, it's been a lot of improvisation. I really enjoyed hearing your previous guest because as a musician myself, I really kind of understand the importance of improvisation. And so that's what this whole spring has been about. You know, for all of my colleagues, moving all of our coursework to online setting, hundreds of courses, and that took up a lot of effort and time. But also as the poet laureate, I had just a bunch of events around the state of Iowa doing, you know, classes or lectures at libraries and museums. And I was going to do a lot of classroom visits. So I've been working on some projects that are portable that can go into those settings in different ways.
I'm curious about the impact on your students at Iowa State, because, of course, they're working on creative projects and all of a sudden their lives have been turned upside down. They're not going to school like they were before. They're not seeing their professors physically in person. But also all of them have families and all of them have vulnerable people that they're worried about, or maybe they're homeschooling their kids at the same time. How did that impact your students and their ability to do creative work?
Oh, absolutely. It's been really complicated and difficult, but at the same time, you know, it's amazing to see how people have kind of risen to the occasion. I think Iowa State gave us such positive messages about being flexible and being generous and being kind to those around us. And so that's been our policy, you know, to allow each other some latitude and flexibility. And my students have been great to me that way, and I've tried to be hopefully good that way toward them. And as you say, I mean, you know, everything from connectivity issues to just the time involved in meeting their own obligations, not only familial, but also you know, their professional obligations, because graduate students, as you know, they are teachers at the same time that they're also students. So they're working with this double kind of set of obligations. So I'm aware that all of my graduate students are, you know, fulfilling their course requirements, in some cases, you know, writing a thesis, ending their graduate program to do a thesis and oral exam. Well, they're also grading, you know, possibly dozens, if not hundreds of papers while they're attempting to teach their own classes. So it's been really complicated.
Yeah, life is super complicated right now. Yes. Tell me where you've been turning for comfort and inspiration right now.
Well, you know, to my own work, I think my graduate students, I've only been teaching a graduate course this semester, so I noticed that my graduate students are really writing about what's going on all around them. A number of them are writing sort of pandemic poems. And I think from my previous experience, I tend to go sort of into the crucible of memory. And so I've been writing about, you know, things from my childhood and remembering previous crises that I've had and trying to apply the things that I learned then to what's happening now, to try to draw on some, hopefully some resilience that I have stored up inside my body from my previous crisis.
Oh, interesting. I think a lot of people have been exploring their memories during this time. We don't have as much input from our lives, you know, new things to think about. I think a lot of us have been looking back. In fact, people even tell me that with their crazy COVID-19 dreams, that they have friends they haven't seen in 30 years showing up in their dreams and things like that. So maybe it's even on a more cosmic level. You have a poem that you brought with you to share with us today. Would you read that for us?
Yeah, it's actually a title poem from my new collection of poetry that's coming out next year. Hopefully, if the press that it is committed to doesn't go under. But I'll find a home for the book, I'm sure. But it's called Gratitude with Dogs Under Stars. If you have dogs, which I know you do, Charity, you might understand this poem. Gratitude with Dogs Under Stars. Bless this night. Bless the small bladders of dogs, urgent under moonlight. Bless Raccoon and her brother, masked 3 a.m. bandits who lower themselves on branches of viburnum into the dumpster, their oily palms scavenge melon rinds, burger wrappers toss tuna cans to pavement with a chime that pricks the ears of my sleeping lhasas, these littermates bred to guard monasteries. Bless the whine and low ruff that warns me awake, and even bless the scramble for boots, coats, leashes, propelled into obsidian night, the crisp exhale of breath that puffs into clouds above my head. Sirius, twinkling beacon in a stippled southern sky, near Castor and Pollux, the twins throwing geminid tracers extinguished into darkness overhead. A scattershot sky, pinpricks of light, dead stars, evidence of ancient violence moving toward us. Let us witness in our short time the brilliance going. Fortunate mortals on the ground, bless this small life among terrestrials who sniff and paw the dirt, who kick their legs and bark at the darkness. Above us, so much deadly light to wish upon.
That's Deborah Marquardt. She is a musician and a poet, Iowa's Poet Laureate. That poem was titled Gratitude with Dogs Under Stars. And Deb, you, as an aside, said, you know, that hopefully this book comes out as long as the press that is going to bring it out survives. This is a frightening time for so many different industries, and publishing is an industry that is experiencing a lot of difficulties right now. Of course, a lot of books are being released, but poets and writers can't do book events, and bookstores are often closed or opened in only a limited way. What kind of fears are you and others dealing with when you look at the industry?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of uncertainty right now, and I just wrote a long kind of op-ed piece about this on the demise of the small press, because New Rivers Press, which is my has been my press for a number of years, they've published my poetry books. They were part of a big sort of vertical cut. That's actually pre-pandemic at Morehead State University, Minnesota State University, Morehead. And they, you know, the university made the decision to cut a lot of the arts programs, so the theater arts and the press itself, as along with philosophy and some other kind of arts and humanities-based departments. And so I think, you know, this is a time, as I wrote in the little op-ed piece, this is a time for us to think about what we're cutting loose and why we're doing it and how sorely we will miss it later, you know. And it seems like we're in the middle of a crisis, and so we might make some rash decisions that we'll really regret later. And so you're right. I mean, and small presses were vulnerable to begin with because they're kind of passion projects. A lot of times they're run by just one or two people who are just give their entire life to them, you know. And so it's hard to know how those small publishing enterprises will come out at the end of this.
You have started a new series. I think that we will see many new things grow out of this time because creative people can't stop creating, at least not for long. You've started a new series on YouTube with the Iowa or Humanities Iowa. You're calling it Poems Across the Distance. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, it was a Mellon grant that Gary Shepard and Chris Rossi had gotten at Humanities Iowa from the Mellon Foundation. It was an initiative called Democracy Informed Citizen, and we were going to have a series of conversations around the state, around the subject of environment and immigration. And you know, when this thing happened, we decided to try to do it immediately. And this Poems Across the Distance sort of video podcast idea kind of came to us. And so I think I'll do maybe 10 to 15 of them, and I'll be interviewing poets and asking them what poems they are returning to during this time of crisis. You know, what are, like I mentioned it as a crucible, I think literature is a kind of crucible you can get inside of for a period of time. And I found myself going back to some old poetry, Chinese poetry, you know, sort of Sanskrit poetry. And so I'll be interviewing poets and asking them what they're writing, what poems they're going to for sanctuary. And so we've launched the first sequence of them, one from me, and then also Mary Swander, who's the former poet laureate, is doing a series of them. And Marvin Bell, who was the first poet laureate of the state, is also doing a series of short poetry readings.
Oh, wonderful. That will be something definitely to look forward to. You have one episode posted so far, so that's something that we can watch for over the weeks and over the months. You have another poem that you brought with you today called Landline. Tell me about this.
Well, you know, I kept my landline way too long. I don't know about other people, but I had this idea that even though I had a cell phone and had plenty of connectivity, I needed this landline because it was, you know, something that connected me to the older generation in my family. So I could read it. Do you want to hear it? Or
yeah, I'd love to.
Landline. I kept the tan wall-mounted trimline phone hanging from its metal plate on my kitchen wall with its lighted touchpad and Bell South label long after I silenced the ringer and disposed of the answering machine, long after I stopped payment of the phone bill, after I discovered that no dial tone arose when I picked up the receiver. I never picked up the receiver. After I learned that the cable carrying the landline into my building no longer ran into the building, I kept this tan wall-mounted trimline phone plugged into the metal plate, this lighted touchpad and long curling cord, which we used to stretch into the bathroom as teenagers, our umbilical for private conversations. Because if the power went out and all the plugged-in phones failed, because the trim line was engineered to receive current through the landline, or if the cataclysmic and always expected solar flare hit the earth, knocking out all cell phones, at least I could pick up the landline and dial that number that still rolls from my tongue in my dreams and say, "Hello, Mother. Hello. How are you?"
That's beautiful. And it's such a, there's so many things that keep us tethered together during this time, even though we are far apart. I love the metaphor of that as well. Deb, we only have a couple of minutes left. For people who are at home and finding themselves with, you know, more time that is not consumed by the kinds of things we used to do, do you have any advice on how to embrace your creativity?
I think, I was mentioning my previous kind of experiences, and I had this experience in the 80s when I lost everything in a fire, and I was stuck in a one-bedroom sort of efficiency apartment in the north side of Fargo. And I think it was a little bit of a primer for what I'm going through now, and maybe what some of us are going through, this isolation. And I think that the way through it is to go deep, is to allow yourself to go deep at moments, maybe not at all moments, but to live with the discomfort of that for whatever time it's uncomfortable, because there are riches inside. And I really loved what your previous guest said about there are unfinished projects that we've set aside. The world is kind of always calling creative people out, come out and do things, to read and to perform and to publish. And sometimes some of the very best, projects are sitting there kind of fallow, just waiting for us. And they're the ones that they require sometimes the hardest work and the greatest, deepest silences. And that's, unfortunately, it's a gift we have right now, those of us who are fortunate enough to be safe and, in a place where we can think and work. And it's hard to say something like that at a time when so many people are in peril. But I think that's what we have to do. We have to go deep internal and sort of find those riches within. And, life is going to return to something. It'll be a new normal, but we will be together in rooms again.
What do you hope to carry with you from this time into the new normal?
I think as a creative person, especially as a writer, I'm always seeking out solitude. And so I've just been trying to, treasure the quiet time that I have right now, to take some things that have been sitting there waiting for me, to pay attention to them and make something more of them. So that's what I hope. And to have stronger relationships with the people in my life. I think I've been reaching out and hearing from people that I haven't heard from for years. And that's a gift. That's a gift of this terrible time.
Well, Deb, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much, Charity, for all the work that you're doing for all of us.
Deborah Marquardt, poet and musician from North Dakota originally. She's a distinguished professor of liberal arts and sciences at Iowa State University and our current Iowa Poet Laureate. This is Talk of Iowa.